Hi, this is John Udell. Today's guest is Cyril Hoori, the CEO and founder of Mexence Technology. He's developed a system that makes the benefits of GPS location available to devices that don't have GPS receivers, but can see either Wi-Fi access points or cell towers. A couple of years ago, when I made my first GPS-enhanced Google Maps mashup, I saw that it would soon become possible to annotate the planet. The problem was that there weren't very many GPS devices in use then, and today there still aren't. By pooling the collective effort of people around the world, and by connecting three different networks, GPS, cellular, and Wi-Fi, Cyril's system, called Navizon, looks like a great way to work around that problem and make location-aware applications available to a whole lot of people. Okay, Cyril. So, I thought what I was able to find out about what you are doing was really interesting, and I thought I would start by just replaying what I think I understand about your stuff, and then you can fill in the blanks, and then we can go on from there, okay?
Sure, let's do that.
Okay, so my understanding is that you guys are bridging really three networks together, one of them being the GPS system, one being the cellular phone network, and one being the internet. One of the examples would be if I'm somebody that has a handheld device that combines the functions of GPS with either or both of internet and cellular, then I can effectively bridge between those two networks. As that bridge, then, I'm in a position to map out the locations of Wi-Fi access points on the one hand or cell towers on the other hand. Good so far?
I would make a few clarification, because the bridging part, I think we should elaborate on that.
Okay.
This technology doesn't need to have two of the three networks. It can be used by some people who will have, you know, two or three of the access to the three networks that you're talking about, GPS, Wi-Fi, and cellular, and some people only access to one.
Yeah, in the case of me being a GPS-equipped person, I am then in a position to do that bridging function and not only contribute positioning data to your network, which can then be utilized by people who lack GPS via the other networks, but also I can actually earn money by doing it, because you've got this very interesting incentive system whereby I earn redeemable points for contributing the locations of access points or cell towers into your database as determined by GPS, right? But on the other hand, if I don't have GPS, then I'm in a position now to use location-aware applications that otherwise would have required GPS. Is that a good summary?
That's correct, yeah.
Okay.
I think you got a good understanding.
Okay.
Our system does a little bit the same thing than what GPS does, which is triangulate signals from satellites.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing is that instead of using satellites, we use cell towers and Wi-Fi access points.
Mm-hmm.
How do we know the position of those cell towers and those Wi-Fi access points? It's the people themselves that are going to build this database, just walking around and driving around with our system equipped with a GPS device. So they're going to sort of copy what's inside the GPS and make it available for others, so that, you know, once someone have been there with the Navizon system equipped with the GPS, then everyone else can find his position in this area. We're just about to release the component that is going to make it very clear to everyone why we have this internet component and why it is so powerful.
Okay.
Starting next week, we'll not only have a presence on mobile devices, but also on Windows XP, like laptops.
Right.
And thanks to this internet component, the Wi-Fi component, what we do is that with your laptop, you will be able to, you know, find your position based on the Wi-Fi access points that are around you.
Based on the fact that you've triangulated on these access points.
We're talking about the access points, the actual beacon that is going to broadcast the signal that you're going to use to connect to the internet from your computer.
Okay.
You know, our users, the one who are, you know, active users,
right,
are going to collect thousands and thousands of those.
And how do they associate those beacons with latitude and longitude?
Well, it's done automatically by our system.
Yeah, but how does it do it?
How does it do it? It looks at several parameters, such as the signal strength and other parameters, the latency of request. Let me give you an example, and you're going to understand how it works. Let's say, you know, you have an indicator with bars. You know, you have 5 bars if you have the best signal, and you have 1 bar if you have a very weak signal.
Mm-hmm.
So you put yourself in a position. You see that you have 3 bars.
Yep.
Then you move a little bit, and you see that you have 4 bars. So you know that, you know, it's closer from the second position.
Yeah, but how do you know the location, the geographical location of the source of each of those beacons?
You write down your latitude and longitude each time you do that. I mean, the system does that.
Okay.
So you see in this position that you have 4 bars. Then you move a little bit and you see that you have 3 bars. So you know that it was closer from where you were before. And then you move a little bit, and by collecting all those X, Y with, you know, the signal strength thing, if you dump that into an algorithm and you have, you know, hundreds of readings,
yep,
the algorithm is going to calculate the exact position of the router.
I got it. That's very cool. So this mapping is being performed by devices which have a dual personality of GPS and also Wi-Fi.
Exactly. The same system can be used as, you know, in positioning mode,
yep,
passive mode,
yep,
or in mapping mode.
Okay, so although it's likely to be a pocket PC, at least originally, it's entirely plausible that laptops with GPS devices will also contribute to the maps.
Yeah, but the people who use laptops for navigation are so small,
right,
that we decided to focus on mobile devices,
right,
for the mapping part,
right.
Now, for the positioning part, yes, definitely, there is a market on laptops. Because,
right,
you know, let's say I'm in Logan Airport in Boston, and I have a meeting in town, I have no idea how to get there, you know, I can find my location and tell me exactly how to get there.
Mm-hmm.
That's a real-life example that millions of users that are traveling with their laptop will be likely, a scenario that they will be likely to be real for them. But in terms of collecting the beacons with the laptop, that's not going to happen. So we really focus on mobile devices to do that part.
Right. Which are also relatively scarce, albeit growing in numbers, right?
Yeah, this market is growing, but it's still fairly small, I have to say. This is why we're trying to develop Navizon on other platforms.
Yeah.
And we're soon going to release a BlackBerry version, a version for the Trio, the Palm Trio as well. And little by little, we're going to extend the reach of Navizon, you know, in the mobile space, so that more and more people will be likely to use the system.
Mm-hmm. In the beginning, the vast majority of the positioning information is going to come from the cell phone side, right?
Right, right. I mean, the positioning information is, I would say, yeah, I mean, it's going to come exclusively from those mobile devices previously known as cell phones.
Got it. So I was reading on your weblog that you're a self-proclaimed GPS cell phone geek.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wanted to ask you something that I've never really gotten a very good answer to, which is, because I live in a small town in New Hampshire, there's really no reason yet to be sort of on the cutting edge of mobile devices because the services aren't really here yet. You know, so I have a kind of a, by today's standards, not at all interesting device, which is an LG VX4400, right? Just an old you know, an old cell phone. Now, it does say on the back, GPS, though, and I've never really been able to get a good answer out of LG or Verizon as to what that means. My sense is it has something to do with E911. Do you know the answer to that?
Absolutely. Verizon has equipped some of their cell phones with GPS chips.
Yep.
But only to comply with the E911 regulations, like you rightly said. There are some other devices, like the one that I'm using. It's a Verizon phone, and it doesn't have a GPS, but it is using, you know, GPS triangulation. Cellular triangulation, just like, you know, the Navizon type of thing, only that it's done by Verizon.
Yeah.
It is not, I mean, they make it available as a product in some cases, but let's say I'm an application provider. I'm like Jamba Juice, and I want to offer an application that is going to tell you what is the closest Jamba Juice in where you are. I go to see Verizon and ask them for this service. I'm not sure they're going to let me do that.
Right.
This is where Navizon proves useful, because you can have a technology that, you know, application providers can license and use as a virtual GPS.
Right. When you said that this is only for E911, I'm just curious because, you know, I do have this gadget, and if it really does have a GPS chip on it, I sure would love access to that data. So what does only E911 mean? Does it mean that the thing is only active in the context of an emergency call?
Okay, that means that you have a little icon on your phone that is a little, some sort of a little target. I mean, if you open your phone, you see on the screen a little circle with a cross.
Mm-hmm.
That means that you're being geolocated by Verizon. You know, you can turn that off if you want.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what is the strategy of Verizon? I have no clue. I mean, are they going to just keep that for E911?
Mm.
Are they going to... They're starting to offer a few services on some phones based on that technology.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very primitive, and I believe that the reason why they are dragging their feet in order to provide that make that information accessible to the public,
mm-hmm,
is for privacy reasons, because they're afraid to be hammered on the privacy front. You know, Big Brother, I mean, we know where you are.
Yeah, which is understandable. It is curious, though, because as I sit now in my office, the thing is evidently active, and I'm quite certain that no GPS signal is reaching me. So that raises the question as to whether it is using cell tower triangulation and GPS, or only tower triangulation, or, you know, what the relationship is. It's I find it kind of mysterious, you know, because...
Yeah, it's kind of mysterious for everyone. Don't worry. Even for us who are really actively involved in that space,
yeah,
there are still lots of mysteries about what's happening in the background.
Okay, well, I'm glad it's not just me then, if you don't know.
Yeah. But one thing that is for sure is that GPS doesn't work inside.
Right.
Doesn't work indoors. So most likely, if you have a position, your position that is being identified, it will be from cell phone triangulation.
Yeah, yeah. So tell me a little bit more about this incentive program. I find that extremely interesting. I read on your blog that in a 2.5 hours drive, you earned enough points by contributing enough data to the system to earn a $20 reward, right?
And as you said, it was when I was in Miami, and I realized, hey, that pays for the gas, you know, for someone who's, you know, driving. I mean, if you're in an urban area, because you know, there's a higher density of wireless beacons in urban areas than on the highway, then you can collect a significant amount of those beacons and have it a source of additional income.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, because and why do we provide this system? So that people will have an incentive to map.
Sure.
And then it will make a better service for the people who are going to license it for, you know, a reasonable fee, this fee is going to go into the fund that is going to pay for the rewards, et cetera, et cetera. So it's, we're building this ecosystem where people are helping each other.
Yeah. Now, before anybody gets the idea that they can make a living doing this, I'm going to presume that the next person who takes the same drive that you took is not going to have the same opportunity to contribute 10,000 points because you will have already mapped the beacons along that route, right?
Actually, no. We're a little bit more generous than you think. It's on the person-by-person basis.
Really?
If you always follow the same route yourself, you're not going to earn additional points for these beacons that you have already mapped. But if someone has mapped them before you, you don't really care.
Okay.
We want to make the system fair for everyone so that someone doesn't come to us and say, hey, I drove hundreds of miles and didn't make any points. You know, when you start mapping, when you see is what you get. Whatever access points you map and cell towers you map will convert into points and then into rewards.
Plus, it's a rapidly evolving wireless landscape, so I'm sure that this ongoing ground truthing, if you will have a significant benefit in terms of keeping the whole system up to date and accurate.
Absolutely. One of the great things about this technology is that it's very dynamic, and the fact that people are constantly mapping their areas make it very up-to-date and accurate. Now, that being said, I mean, for someone, well, I want to, like you said, I want to warn people that, you know, you cannot make a living out of the reward system. I have to say, though, that for someone who is a mobile worker, such as a truck driver or a taxi driver, it can be really significant.
It's an additional way of justifying the purchase of the device.
Absolutely. If you're a mobile worker, you can really make $100 a month in additional revenue.
Hmm. So how long have you been running this program, and how much has it contributed to your database?
We've been running this program since the beginning of August.
Okay.
And we have to say that people have been very enthusiastic about using it. We have there are now, you know, hundreds and thousands even of Navizon fans that were already fans before, but that are even more so now with this Navizon program, and they are mapping the area furiously. And that phenomenon, one of the interesting part is that it happens worldwide.
Yeah.
It's something new in the wireless space, a community that is worldwide. So far, everything on mobile devices was controlled by carriers.
Yep.
Just by the nature of the space, the fact that the carrier operate on a country-by-country basis, you couldn't have a real community for a cell phone application.
Yeah.
One of the other interesting parts about Navizon is that it is a global application for mobile devices.
Yeah.
You know, regardless of the carrier you use and regardless of the country you are in.
Yeah. Yeah, great point. So this was from the perspective of someone who, again, is using what is a free product, but there's also the premium product. Which is, I gather, it's a one-time, a $20 license one time?
That's correct, yeah.
So let's talk through, from the perspective of the user of the premium product, what the situation is and what you can do.
Let's say I just purchased a pocket PC or a phone that is compatible with Navizon.
Mm-hmm.
99% of the cases, it doesn't have GPS built in.
Right.
So, you know, I'm going to, you know, play with my phone, see what I can do with it, and see this application, that is, this Navizon application, that can tell my position, can show where I am on the map, can tell me where I can find the closest Starbucks or Apple store around me,
mm-hmm.
and let me leave notes for others, with the geotags. Mm-hmm. It will let me know if my daughter got safely to school with the buddy finder, the buddy tracker, whatever you want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all that for $19.99. And the option is, the other option is to buy a GPS device if I want to have the same type of location-based application for $120.
Right. Right.
So we're saying that for just a fraction of the cost of a GPS device, you can have a system that tells your approximate position using Wi-Fi and cellular signals, and that can be useful for all the applications I mentioned.
And I'm thinking of some others, too, and I'm also thinking beyond the mobile device situation. So you mentioned laptops before, right? So it'd be very interesting for me to be able to tag latitude and longitude onto photos that I upload.
Absolutely. We have already people that, I mean, we know of people that are doing that and are using Navizon for just that.
Yeah.
But one thing that is important is that starting, I mean, we did release our first version of the API, but starting Monday, we are going to really make the hard launch for this API that is going to allow software developers to use the Navizon positioning engine into their own application.
Mm-hmm.
So all of these applications that you're talking about and that you're thinking about, you'll just have to get the Navizon API. And it will be a piece of software that will emulate a virtual GPS.
Yes.
And then you'll be able to do whatever you want with it.
Yes. And you'll have this for Windows and, I guess, presumably, eventually, for other operating systems, too?
On mobile devices, it will be on Windows. And on laptops, it will be cross-platform. It will work also on Mac.
Great. Excellent. Just curious, when would I be able to get that for my PowerBook, do you think?
Monday, hopefully.
Really?
Yeah.
Excellent. So I mentioned the idea of ground truthing. Well, so in addition to people walking around on planet Earth doing the ground truthing, if you will, of the Wi-Fi landscape, they're also now going to be in a position to do the same thing for map data. And, you know, this gets into a really pretty interesting area having to do with ultimately sort of who owns data, you know, and that affects the people who are providers of all kinds of map data, and potentially it comes back and affects you as well, I'm guessing, because at least initially, this database that you're constructing is a huge competitive advantage. And I am assuming initially you own it completely, but at the same time, the technology is starting to create the possibility for people to collaboratively open up all kinds of geographically related data if they choose to. So I'm sure you've thought about that. Do you worry about the fact that long term, the kind of database that you're building and which will be a competitive advantage for your company is something that can alternatively materialize just through the sort of open collaborative effort of the very people whom you've empowered through this technology to create their own geospatial applications? You know, I claim that the world is going to build its own Navtech and TeleAtlas database,
right,
over time, right?
And and I know some initiatives that are already doing just that.
Yeah, and so in the same way, it seems like the world eventually can build its own open Navizon database, right?
Yeah, I mean, already we're a collaborative database. You know, it's not, you know, if you look at the way people are communicating in our forum, or, you know, you can see really the spirit of a community here.
Yes.
What we're making, what we're just doing is that we're making it a smart community.
Yeah.
You know, you can look at it as a commercial application because we're paying people to, I mean, we're giving rewards for people to navigate, but not really. We're just putting the things together so that, you know, people who will benefit from this service will pay the people who build the service.
Yeah, yeah.
It's hard work.
And I think this is, by the way, I think this is fabulous, and I'm completely on your side here, and what I'm looking to explore is, so probably 10 or 15 years ago, the automatic reflex would have been, we're making the investment to create this database, and we own this database, and this database is a proprietary advantage and is a key component of the value of our company. And I would say an emerging alternative to that attitude is to say, it isn't about owning the data, it's about providing the best services related to that data. And, you know, we think that we can be commercially successful on the strength of our services, you know, rather than our ownership of data, right? That's mm-hmm. that's really the interesting question here. And it sounds like that's how you're thinking about this. Is that fair to say?
Yeah. You know, we're building, it's true, a business. There's no, because, you know, it looks like community, in order to be cool, must not have a business model.
No, I don't think that's cool at all. I think, you know, that, right, I don't think that. You know, what I do
I
think
mean,
is...
You don't think that, but some Web 2.0 gurus seem to think that way.
I know they do.
And so, yeah, we're building a business model on this, on a collaborative system.
Yeah.
And we believe that it's the only way it will work, because it requires really some sort of internal regulation in order for it to work. Why am I saying that? Because there was a similar initiative that was launched by Intel, and mm-hmm. that was open source, and you had tens of people from Stanford, you know, involved in this project, and some mm-hmm. PhDs and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It just didn't work. I mean, and now, you know, this project is moribund, because, hey, you had this technology that was open source, that was doing... there was no one to really give people a reason to use it.
Yes.
And it didn't happen. So the example that you're talking about is... there's a real life example of what you just said, what you just mentioned, and it has been a failure.
Mm-hmm.
And it is partly based on that failure that we said that this technology has a great potential, but there has to be, you know, structure behind it, and there must be like a commercial aspect to it.
Yes.
It cannot just be an open source research type of program. Otherwise, I mean, it will, you know, there will be cool technology, but very few people using it.
Absolutely. And, you know, in particular, in what is still the bootstrapping phase, and for a long time will be the bootstrapping phase, because obviously the vast majority of people on any network aren't making any use of location awareness. And I completely agree. This is the best model that I've seen to bootstrap that.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, I think it's great. You know, it's going to be interesting once the bootstrap phase is well underway to see that, you know, I predict a certain amount of tension between, well, you know what? It just doesn't matter, because because first things first, right? And so I'm extremely anxious to get a hold of that toolkit and give it a try next week. And even though I am not in an area that is densely populated with access points, there are enough of them, and I also have an incentive to use GPS in tandem with that. So I'm
right.
I'm going to be really interested in getting involved with this stuff. You know, I had a kind of a revelation a couple of years ago that led me to do one of the early Google Maps mashups, and it was really nothing fancier than noticing that when Google Maps first came out, it was possible to inject XML data into the web application, which contained, among other things, latitude and longitude. And
right.
The minute I saw that, I went on and actually bought my first GPS, and I took a tour of my town, and I collected waypoints, and I made a map that was linking these very specific locations to information on the web. And I just, you know, I stood back from that and I just said, wow, you know, this is, you know, this is how, as I put it then, this is how we're all going to annotate the planet.
Right. I mean, this is exactly what we did with the geotag. So you,
yeah,
you came up with that way before us.
Yeah.
Whereby you know, people can leave notes on a specific location.
Exactly.
And the same way that you're just describing, if you go in the user section of Navizon, you can have all these notes that people have left displayed on Google Maps.
Yeah.
And some include images, some include sounds. We can do all sort of very, very interesting things.
Yeah. Well, I am convinced to this day that most people who aren't technology geek-oriented types like you and me have really not considered what are the sort of just ordinary day-to-day practical benefits of something like this. And they in a lot of cases, they just boil down to really mundane-sounding things. But in aggregate, it's just an enormous collective phenomenon. The example that I gave in that project that I did was that there was a particular tree, believe it or not, in the cemetery in the town where I live, and in that tree there was a squirrel's nest, and the interesting thing about that squirrel's nest was that the squirrel had collected some American flags from the cemetery and woven them into his nest. And I was able to pinpoint that location on a map and attach my description of that to the location. And you know, just, it's very mundane, but, you know, for about a year and a half, I'd been trying to explain to the newspaper reporter in my town that this was kind of an interesting phenomenon and humorous, and he might want to go and take a picture of it. And I was never able to explain to him how to get there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and now I had, you know, now I could direct this guy to a particular tree.
Right, absolutely. No, yeah, I agree. I never thought about this example about, you know, a specific tree, but I'll definitely, that is a specific tree that you want to point someone else at.
Yeah, because you know what? There's a story connected to that tree, mm-hmm. and you'd like to share that story.
Right.
And as a matter of fact, I'm glad I did, because you know, now actually the flags have rotted away, and you know, but you know, there's still the memory on the web of the fact that occurred at that location, and other people have it, you know, and other stories have collected around it. It's just it's a wonderful thing.
Yeah, absolutely. So the idea to group the geotag, which is very similar to what you're describing, with the Navizon positioning engine, is that once you go there, I mean, it, basically, you know, if you have the GPS device, well, if you can put an annotation, you can be sure that you will see that someone else who might see this annotation will not have to have a GPS device.
Exactly.
Why? Because if you had Navizon when you were there, it means that either the area was covered already, or that you had a GPS device and that you covered this area yourself.
Yes.
So and we thought that by coupling the two, by grouping them, you could extend the reach of these applications that so far were limited to GPS geeks.
Yes.
And now all you need in order to see the annotations that others have put is a cell phone that is compatible with Navizon.
Yeah. My hat's off to you. I think this is a truly wonderful and exciting development, and I wish you a lot of luck with this. I think it's...
Well, thank you. We're also very excited, and especially with what's ahead of us with the release of the SDK, both for the web and for mobile devices, which I'm sure is going to give life to many really cool applications that people will come up with.
Yeah, yeah. Well, thanks very much.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, have a good day.